Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Monkey Tennis listeners. It's producer Jed here. Don't worry, this message isn't about Brexit either. Needless to say, the boys don't know I'm talking to you right now. And if I'm caught, my one word an episode will be dramatically cut. And we don't want to lose the producer Jed fans. Both of them will be heartbroken. First on the agenda today is some plugs. If you like Monkey Tennis, you will definitely tolerate What to Watch on Netflix. It's clinically chubbed up and riding high as the current number one podcast on iTunes. It's got famous people in it and also the hosts of Monkey Tennis and Nick. There's also a new series of Smegheads out, which is the Red Dwarf version of Monkey Tennis with less beer and more estrogen. Not to drink, I'm not drinking estrogen, not on the podcast anyway. Thanks for nothing, Brewdog. I can mix beer and lilt too, guys. You're nothing special. There's also the Pilot Podcast, which aims to find the greatest pilot episode of all time through the medium of who can shout the loudest. Spoilers, it's probably Lost. Lastly, we are doing Monkey Tennis Live at the Prince Charles Cinema in London's Leicester Square on November the 22nd. We've been upgraded to the big room and tickets are selling fast. So if you want to celebrate Thanksgiving, Gazpacho Soup Day or Christmas come early, then buy tickets at postpoppodcast.com/monkeytennislive. Don't forget to watch Knowing Me, Knowing You'll before you turn up. Otherwise, you'll spend the whole evening looking down at the discarded ticket stubs for the room and sing along a Grease. And nobody wants that. Simon Grindle's there too. Enjoy the show.
Monkey Tennis?
Smelly Alan Fartridge.
Linton Travel Tavern seemed an obvious choice.
Monkey Tennis?
At the BBC of all places. Be real.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey Tennis?
It will be called Alan's Show. I decided, and would be absolutely ace.
Monkey Tennis?
But needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Incredibly, the rights to swallow are still available for purchase.
Nick Holder?
You can come and stay anytime you like.
And Tom Stab?
Mouse and Noth.
So
basically what happened there is I had exactly the same quote as Nick and was massively thrown and panicked,
suddenly worried.
That's the fun of that game, isn't it?
Anything could happen. We're rattling our way through iPartridge. We need to talk about Alan's autobiography, and we're on to chapter 22, which Tom Stab is firmly at the helm of.
Hello there. Yes, as Adam says, chapter 22, homelessness. Nick, can you talk us through the musical choices for this section, please?
I can, but essentially it's anything by Keane.
Again, that's the second time that's happened. Brilliant.
Oh, really? He's got Anything by Keane in there twice?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
An earlier chapter.
Just for clarity, Anything's not a song by Keane, is it?
No, it is not.
Yep. Anything by Keane. Yeah, so as Adam said, this chapter, chapter 22, is called Homelessness, although there is a slight discrepancy that we alluded to in the last episode about the title.
I think we might have found iPartridge's first genuine typo, because...
Sorry, HarperCollins.
In the book, chapter 22 is homelessness, and I think perhaps if you were doing a spell check, it's obviously already going to come up as an incorrect word because of lessnessness, and so you wouldn't necessarily notice you slipped an extra S in there. The audiobook, obviously, you can hear Alan say the chapter title, which is how we know this is incorrect.
So to clarify the pronunciation, let's just throw to Alan now.
22. Homelessness.
Ah, you see.
There you go. S. Confirmation that homelessness is the correct pronunciation, or the correct word, sorry. And in the book, homelessness is in there. So,
It's a bit of an obvious gag, isn't it, this one? The old sort of adding an extra ness. I don't think Alan's that stupid, is he?
I don't know. I quite like it.
I laughed my tits off when I first heard it.
Happy to be overruled.
Yeah. So Alan finally leaves the Travel Tavern. One thing that we don't really know in the TV show I'm Alan Partridge that is detailed in the book. He moves into a penthouse in Regent's Park, saying he doesn't care about the money. That is what?
Where's that come from?
Yeah, I know. That's kind of a little bit of a curveball. I don't remember originally when I listened to this. Because I listened to the audiobook before I read it. I don't remember that section. When I reread it and got to that bit, I was like, I really don't remember that bit. But that's not mentioned in I'm Alan Partridge at all, is it?
I guess it's one of those things that every time there's a whiff of a BBC contract, he goes off and buys or rents a massive place. Yeah.
So it's a five-bedroom house.
Yeah, at this point, he's coming off believing he's got another series off from Chris Feather, isn't he? So he's probably just got overexcited and gone straight to Regent's Park.
And I love what he says. Penthouse in Regent's Park. Not because I liked London or wanted to show them all, but simply because it is practical for me to be close to TV Centre. Mm. To clarify, for those that don't know London that well, it's nowhere near TV Centre.
Feather has sadly passed. Chris's replacement, Jessica Boyle, reneges on the contract, and Alan just kind of leaves that. They have a conversation about it, and people say that he could have pursued legal matters on that contract, but he just kind of leaves and says he could have sat it out, but he had bigger fish to fry. Now, as we know, Alan is an unreliable narrator. Do we think that happened?
No.
No, I think he tried every trick in the book to keep that contract on the table.
Can we just talk about how Alan describes Jessica Boyle? There are two absolutely brilliant brilliant descriptions here. She is described as a Psy in human form. And he continues, Boyle is one of the new breed of BBC TV execs for whom television programmes seem to be a genuine inconvenience.
Also, in talking about Alan as an unreliable narrator, and did he actually fight to keep this contract on the table, bear in mind that in the same breath he describes Susan at the Travel Tavern as saying that she ached to have me inside of her. So I think we now seriously
take it. I also did think reading that. Too far, Alan.
Yeah. He could have probably got some kind of compensation or some kind of payout from this contract, couldn't he? Because it was actually signed.
Well, by him.
Yeah, but no one knows that it wasn't signed by him, do they?
Well, I think that's the point. They don't believe that it's this genuine signature, isn't it?
There's enough ambiguity for them to weasel out of the deal.
Although he had just shut his hand in a door, allegedly.
Allegedly. So Alan kind of doesn't have this this contract anymore. He doesn't have any money. He's broke. And he says that the £49 a night at the Linton Travel Tavern is out of his budget. I've crunched those numbers to work out how much Alan had actually paid throughout his entire stay, one of 183 days at the Linton Travel Tavern. Mm-hmm. So 183 days in total, £49 a night. Alan spent £8,967 on his duration at the Linton Travel Tavern.
Wow.
It also says in this chapter that he was earning north of £200,000 per annum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably a lie.
I think that's just
a lie,
isn't it?
Very strange.
I mean, that's also the figure that was on the contract as well. So.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Got anything else on Jessica Boyle?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed Alan explaining the reasoning why she didn't want to commission another show from him. He says, Boyle outlined exactly why she didn't want another chat show from me, but it was all viewing figures and audience appreciation ratings and stats and figures.
I could just imagine Alan going, yeah.
You can prove anything with facts.
Yeah,
exactly. She is kind of just worth mentioning that she is also accompanied by a strapping Irish lawyer called Kev Butterworth, who apparently was beaten up by his wife when a sex game went wrong because he couldn't remember the safety word.
Also, that sex game went wrong 12 years ago.
He still bears the scars.
Does Alan, I can't remember from reading now, does why does Alan know that? Is that kind of like public knowledge across the BBC or something?
Good point, actually. There's a footnote that goes into a lot more detail about it, which I'm happy to go through, but I think it's probably best left
in the bedroom.
It's mainly that she's been beating him consistently for 12 years because he can't remember the code word to make her stop.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if he's tried crayfish.
So,
Alpha Papa reference.
Yes. Obviously, yes, we've spoken about the Tramville Tavern now being out of Alan's budget. So he returns to the Lamberts. As we all know, that famous quote from Trevor Lambert, "You can come and stay anytime you like." So Alan takes full advantage of that.
Yeah, because before he went to the Lamberts, he writes, "With a seriously heavy heart, he was about to drive to the modest bungalow his assistant shared with her racist mother." And obviously he realised he's got the Lamberts deal on the table.
It's so good. Sheila answers the door and he goes to kiss her by basically saying hello and kisses her on the cheek. She recoils.
Yeah, they basically have no idea who he is, do they?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. He gets back in there. He details that Trevor's asthma is now really bad. In the book, it says that he has an oxygen mask over his nose and mouth. But in the audiobook, Alan says mouse and noth.
Yeah,
another one of those occurrences of Alan like pronouncing something ridiculously badly wrong, and I don't understand why. Nesquilk. Yeah, exactly. Nesquilk. Mouse and Noth.
Is that written normally in the book then?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. But in the audiobook, he says Mouse and Noth.
I guess they've just done stuff like that to just add a few kind of extra gags in vice versa, haven't
they?
Yeah, really?
So the audiobook works.
Keep us on our toes.
Yeah.
Anybody got any details of what Alan gets up to while he's staying at the Lamberts?
No, other than massively outstaying his welcome.
Well, he needs to manage a solid morning of show preparation every day. I think my favourite part was that he says, "I needed the kitchen to myself between 9 and 12. I had to insist on that." So he ends up staying with them for 3 months and basically totally takes over.
Two elderly people, one suffering with severe asthma.
Yeah,
he's turned up unannounced about, well, I guess the timeline, it makes this at least 30 years after they made the initial offer.
Yeah.
Of staying
well,
anytime
yeah,
you
he
like.
Does say they'd not seen me since I was 17 and I'd not been in the house since I was 7.
So, Alan is adamant that he won't outstay his welcome, so he leaves after 14 weeks.
A brilliant final line to that chapter as well. Sorry, Fran Lambert says, "Don't mention it," Fran Lambert seemed to say with the good side of her face. "You can come and stay anytime you like."
And now we move on to chapter 23, Swallow. Nick, can you talk us through Alan's mandatory playlist for this section of the book, please?
I certainly can. It's Axel F. It's a song, and the artist is Harold Faltermeyer. Do we know who that is? Never heard of
it. Yeah, that's... As seen and heard on Beverly Hills Cop.
Let's just do this right now.
Great, great content. So Swallow opens, Alan describes that at the...
because he's Axel Foley.
Oh. Right, so on the first page of Swallow...
You're listening to the Beverly Hills Cop podcast.
So the opening page of... Alan's pilot script for Norwich-based detective Swallow reads, "Dedicated to the memory of Stacey Morgan, 7. It then transpires that Stacey isn't dead and doesn't even exist.
But he wanted to set a poignant tone for the episode and or gain enough pity to sway the mind of a commissioner.
Exactly.
Or basically just throw in some emotional blackmail trying to get his script made.
But now Stacey's name has been removed and replaced with that of Pete Gabbitas, who Alan says is now dead and is sorely missed. Alan says that Pete is the closest Alan he's ever had to a manager or agent. He says he's never needed one and his career is tantamount as a reason for that. Yeah.
I would beg to differ. I think Alan would have benefited from a manager.
Exactly.
Quite a lot.
And it says in the book that Pete was the sufferer of a serious illness, the little known tall poppy syndrome. Has anyone looked up tall poppy syndrome? I hadn't heard of it and thought, oh, maybe it's something they made up. The illness, remember, serious illness that Pete Gabbitas has, tall poppy syndrome, is a perceived tendency to discredit or disparage those who have achieved notable wealth or prominence in public life. So not an illness whatsoever. Anybody got anything else on Pete Gabbitas?
Well, it's probably worth mentioning the sweet spot for his driving capability, as highlighted by Alan, which is 6 pints of lager and a half bottle of wine.
That absolute sweet spot.
Yeah.
That probably was, like, in the 80s, what people would probably consider to be the limit. I've got to stop now, guys. I am driving.
Yeah. I've got to stop. I've gone blind.
I can't see.
Alan says that, obviously, he knows Pete and that he's a better driver when he's drunk.
Yeah. Just so much more confident. Yeah.
So then we get into Swallow. Shall I hit you with some Swallow facts?
Oh, yeah.
So Swallow is 50. He works in Norwich's CID. He drives a brand new five-door Audi A3 turbo diesel. He's bulimic. He carries a comb, two biros, a fisherman's friends, the mint, not people, and a faint smell of vomit, plus an evidence bag that he never uses for evidence, but keeps in case he has a big meal. He also wears press slacks, a black leather tie. Is a leather tie a thing? Never heard of that.
They do exist, okay. But it's mainly just like, yeah, fashion
and
victims.
Jed, are you indicating that you've got one, or you're just a fan of them?
Do you own a leather tie? Do you use it as... I don't want to know.
He wears buffed up shoes, a brown leather jacket, and in his downtime, he solves dingbats and word searches. He has a weakness for 10,000 piece jigsaws, which, in case you didn't notice, is a metaphor for solving cases, as Alan says.
Did notice. Yeah.
He has no middle fingers on one hand, so is permanently doing the devil horns. We're getting quite a picture of Swallow here. He has a large collection of samurai swords.
The largest collection in Europe, nonetheless.
Thank you very much. But no one knows how he got them. He's into cooking, gardening, Japanese martial art kendo. He has a sparring partner who owns a laundry shop in Norwich called Chan. And he's right wing.
No. Is he politically correct? Who? Swallow? No chance.
So basically, what we've established here is it's kind of Norwich's answer to Morse, really. He's kind of taken the regional detective idea and concept and shifted it to Norwich.
I think Alan's taken all of the tropes of your traditional detective and their kind of weird eccentricities and quirks and brought them all up into one.
Yes.
He's gone too far with it.
Would you also say that Swallow is sort of a figure that Alan would like to be?
Apart from the bulimia.
And maybe losing two fingers on his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe Alan thinks that's quite cool.
Yeah, maybe.
I think, as we know, Alan has a fan of samurai swords in his house. So
yeah. That's what made me think, you know, he's transplanting a lot of his own interests onto Swallow.
Yep, indeed.
Swallow, he's kind of, when he's kind of referencing his old school views, he's also aware that disproportionately high amounts of crime are committed by the unemployed and asylum seekers. So I think that's further evidence that he's kind of implanting his own views on Swallow.
He's projecting, isn't he? Yeah. He's projecting.
It's okay for Swallow to say it, but not for Alan.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not okay for anyone to say it.
The pilot episode of Swallow is action-packed. Alan goes into lots of detail about what happens. I'd argue that there's probably too much that happens in the first episode of Swallow in the pilot. He's trying to cram too much in. So obviously, like I said, Alan goes into a list of all the things that happen in the pilot episode. I've taken these and I've turned it into a little game for this section. So this is the quiz element of my my section of the book. Join me as we play Swallow or Swall-no.
Amazing.
So basically, what I've done is, Adam, no looking at my screen, please.
Okay.
What I've done here is I've taken the things that Alan describes in the book. So books down, please, Nick. And I've added in some fictional
I'll close
ones.
My laptop as well.
And I've added in some fictional things that happen as well. And I need you to tell me whether they happen in the pilot episode of Swallow or they don't happen in the pilot episode of Swallow. So Swallow or Swall-no. That's how I want you to answer the questions. Right.
Do we need a bell for this?
Yes, come on. Pass the bell.
And are we answering as a group?
Group
consensus. Group consensus. Swallow for yes or Swall-no for no. He blows the lid on a drug racket who are smuggling drugs hidden up the bums of elephants.
Swallow, I think.
Yeah. It is Swallow. Yes. It is Swallow. He exposes corporate financial irregularities at a local spa when his contactless bank card incorrectly charges him for a large box of tampons.
Swall-no?
I like it, but I think it's Swall-no.
It is Swall-no.
Yeah.
So you came up with
that? I came up with that. Yes.
That's very good.
He arrests a gang of local kids for spray painting larger tits on the actual tits on a poster of Delia Smith's latest cookbook.
Ooh, it's very good either way.
I think it's Swall-no.
Swall-no.
It is Swall-no. Yeah. That is a Tom Stab creation.
I am realising, though, I cannot remember anything from the actual chapter. I'm struggling.
He suddenly realises there are no black people in Norwich. Have they been spirited away or were they never there?
It's Swallow.
That is Swallow.
It is Swallow, yes. He wages war against the travelling community who almost never have the correct documentation for their vehicles.
Swallow.
It is Swallow, yes. He brings down an illegal gambling ring by beating the gang leader at a game of Snap.
Swall-no.
That is Swall-no, yes.
Very good, though.
The last one. He is assigned a sidekick and they have to come together to find out who's been fly-tipping in a residential area.
Ooh, I'm really unsure about that.
There's definitely something about fly-tipping. I'm just not sure if it's worded like that, but there is something about flying.
Sure.
I think it might be Swall-no.
I was
veering towards Swallow.
Okay, group consensus.
Swallow?
We'll say Swallow.
Two, three.
It's Swallow.
Yes.
Yes.
Full marks. Well done, everyone.
That was excellent, Tom.
And that concludes quizzing. Swallow or Swallno.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Alan ends the chapter by saying the rights to Swallow are still available. So, question to the group.
Incredibly.
Incredibly. Would you commission this and would you watch it?
Watch, yes. Commission, no. I would not want to be financially responsible for this.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I don't think it actually sounds that bad. I think it's quite interesting. He's got
quite a detailed character profile as well. He hasn't just gone, oh, it's a detective, actually. Yeah, yeah. He's built up the character. There's layers to him.
Alan, bring your ideas to me. I'll commission him. Yeah. That's everything I've got on Swallow. Then has anybody got anything else to add?
No, I think we should move on to chapter 24.
Let's do it.
A chapter that's entirely missing from the audiobook, am I right?
Yes, controversially. This is chapter 24, Other Better TV Work, which is in the book, but not in the audiobook.
So that means I'll have no knowledge of it because I haven't read the book. I only listened to the audiobook.
Right, Jed, just
it'll
turn
be a voyage
off
of discovery
Nick's
for
mic.
You.
Yeah, 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 very much. Yep,
Nick can leave for a bit.
That's
now.
Just a rule generally, isn't it?
So I guess we should probably wildly speculate why this chapter is in the book and not in the audiobook. But to be honest, I have no idea why they would do that, whether it's just a time constraint thing. Full audiobook. Clocks in at just under 7 hours, doesn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah.
So maybe they just thought they'd jettison a chapter to keep it under that, but I don't think that really matters. And it's not like it's a bad chapter either. I thought it was quite a good chapter because it pulls together quite a few bits of the Alan timeline and a lot of kind of his what he's been doing in those intervening years.
It's really strange then that it wouldn't be in there. That seems like a really... There must be a reason, but I can't think of
it. I wonder if there's something vaguely litigious in the chapter or something like that.
Maybe. The other thing that I think of is that these books were released on CD, so maybe it was they needed, like you said, keep the running time down to be able to fit onto two CDs.
It would have meant a whole extra disc production cost.
Yeah, maybe.
I would have thought artistic integrity would mean you would just have that extra disc.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, this might be one we have to throw out to the Monkey Tennis audience. If you think you know why there's a chapter in the printed book that's not in the audiobook, thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and also it's probably worth pointing out there is no mandatory listening. There's no mandatory music for this chapter.
You read this in silence.
Yes.
So Alan kind of opens this chapter by stating that a majority of TV is actually unwanted.
Very true.
I kind of go with that.
There's a quote here. Do you honestly think anyone ever wanted to watch Going for Gold with Henry Kelly or Set the Video for World in Action? The same cannot be said for corporate marketing or public information videos. And so basically Alan says that the money is brilliant and that's why he does them. So between 96 and 98, Alan became indispensable in this special strand. This is basically him kind of going into detail about his corporate video work.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting before we delve into that world. At the beginning of the chapter, Alan is actually very dismissive of the TV viewing audience. Mm. So is that just because at this point he's not on telly, so he's decided he doesn't care?
Yes.
Because he says audiences sit there stuffing Doritos into their fat mouths, passively allowing television programmes to wash over them with the odd dribble drab landing in their eyes and ears.
And we also know that he's got a disdain for the general public and basically had to harden himself to ignore even compliments from members of the public.
Yeah, and between 96 and 98, Alan says that he does 60 corporate videos for everything from potato-based food products to Latvia. he also references being cow-bombed by APFs, anti-partridge farmers.
He also says that he learned plenty, including the fact that you must smile when you say the name of the product, even if it's for a genito-urinary complaint.
Yeah, and I obviously just really love the phrase cow-bombed. So obviously that's a reference to I'm Alan Partridge when some anti-partridge farmers take exception to something that Alan said on the radio and drop a dead cow on him while he's filming a corporate video. There's a little footnote in iPartridge that I'd like to read out verbatim that goes into a bit more detail. He says, the previous week, I got myself caught up in a row with the local farming community over some comments I may or may not have made. I did make them. Yeah. About intensive farming techniques. For the record, I'd like to say once again that these comments were made in the heat of the moment and that I fully and categorically retract many of them. And actually, the issues of slander aside, it made for some scintillating radio. So
well, that's true.
Yeah, that's very true. So Alan is obviously saying that he's apologising for some of the comments that he made, but not all of them.
Yeah, I think what I really like about this chapter is the way that, like I was saying, it fills in the gaps in everything that's happening in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2. So his TV career is off the rails, mm-hmm. and he's making money by doing all these corporate things like Crash Bang Wallop and everything that we get into. But I really like the fact that we're getting his perspective on those things that we didn't necessarily see in the actual series as well.
I can give you some perspective on that right now.
Well, please do, yeah.
He does talk about Crash Bang Wallop.
What a video.
So Alan says that the show, his idea for the show's USP was to actually show the fatalities. This was, of course, overruled, but the compromise is that they recreate the crashes using crash test dummies, and he says that he hasn't laughed so much in years. he loves it.
It says here that he tried to get one with a crash test dog.
Yeah, but they don't make them. Yeah. Oh, and also around this time, Alan has got, he's got massive, he's got chubbed up.
Yeah. And I didn't realise as well just quite how much he loves the kind of crash tests. It says that he would slow down when he sees crashes on the side of roads to grab a few snaps on his camera phone.
Oh. Like, he also said that he's chubbed up to the extent that he's disabled the driver's side airbag on his Rover because it's simply not needed.
He refers to it as his newfound bigness. I did like a turn of phrase slightly earlier in the chapter with the being cow-bombed, as it was. He describes that, the cow landing on him, as being trapped under what was essentially a vast leather jacket. moving back to Crash Bang Wallop, he does detail about that he started following people home from company Christmas parties, hoping that he'd get footage for this. He'd do the tailgating and Lynn would hang out of the window with a camcorder.
Brilliant. Like a sort of low-budget Norfolk version of the film Nightcrawler.
Yeah. And it's worth mentioning, as we've just discussed, Alan is chubbed up at this point. He's got newfound bigness. There is a great picture in the picture section of the book where he's got the fat suit on and pulling a bit of a ridiculous pose. Perhaps we should post up, because I hadn't seen it before. I've only seen it in the book, basically.
Then Alan kind of switches tact and talks about how he's always kind of adored words, and he says that in his house growing up, the Partridge paper of choice was the Daily Express. But then one day, things suddenly changed when he became a man with his own thoughts and opinions and his own pubes. He knew he needed
pubes
something.
Again.
He knew he needed something radically different, so rushed out and bought the Daily Mail.
Radically different.
Awful. And then he goes on to talk about how much he loves Richard Littlejohn. He doesn't just fire from the hip; he bazookas from it with his views on immigrants, travelling tinkers, and especially homosexuals. There's the homosexuals again. Alan.
And Alan thinks his pieces are so good that he would rip them out and laminate them, yeah. Keeping them in his downstairs loo, a simple wipe-clean tribute to one of the most progressive thinkers in the United Kingdom.
I've just made a little bit of a note that there's a big section about learning to drive in a story about June Whitfield, which I don't think is actually very good, and I've got a note here. I can kind of see why it was cut from the audio.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe, yeah. And then he does kind of talk about the wet T-shirt competition, wet T-shirt video, sorry, with Meteor. He doesn't actually mention Meteor, but he just talks about that he did some work for a company wet T-shirt.
He says some of their other business interests were not a good match with brand Partridge, the prime example being wet T-shirt contests. Becoming quietly aroused as you watch a couple of young tits slowly reveal themselves through a piss wet T-shirt.
Yep.
Alan's words, not mine.
Yep. He says that's not accessible now and that modern women are, quote, very different beasts.
But he does specify that I use the word beast in the most complimentary possible sense.
Yep.
You've still used it though, Alan, haven't you?
Yeah, but then he kind of ends the chapter with kind of going back on himself there in one way. He kind of, I'll read it out. One can hardly imagine a quintessentially 21st century lady like Carol Vorderman allowing her lady breasts to become sodden solely for the amusement of the nation's sell-through video buying public. Not that it wouldn't be a pleasant sight. The last thing I want to do is cause Mrs. Vorderman any offence. I've absolutely no doubt that her chest is every bit as impressive and accurate as her maths.
How can a chest be accurate?
I don't know.
This is like in Scissored Isle when he says, like Carol, the warehouse was becoming increasingly cold and unloving. How can a warehouse be loving?
Make very good points, man. Those are all the notes I have on this chapter. Anybody got anything to add?
No, I think we should march on skirmish.
Marching on skirmish. Good link there. Chapter 25. Nikki A, what are the music choices for this section?
They are for marching on skirmish.
Filling for time again.
Thank you. Fate of Grey by Visage.
Oh, big tune.
I don't know that one either.
Don't know that.
Go hum it along and I'll see if I know it.
Jed has just used the word.
What? Fate of Grey.
But a little bit.
I vaguely recognise it.
It's good. I mean, listen to it on our playlist.
Yeah.
Tom, where can we find the playlist?
We put it on Spotify. We put a link to it on our socials somewhere across the previous few weeks.
Yep. So if you, like Nick, don't know what that song is, you can listen to it on our playlist. A hush descended over the studio. I took a breath and spoke. You have two phosphorus bombs, a confiscated IED, two fin-stabilised mortars and a German MG3 machine gun with a full magazine. The target is a missile silo. What are you opting to play with?
Phosphorus bomb, please.
I can tell you that the silo is adjacent to a hospital. Play or rearm?
Play.
He's gone for play, which means this is a high-risk question. Your topic is American sitcoms. Get this wrong and you wipe out the hospital and are back down to £100. Get it right and the dishwasher is yours.
Wow, the drama.
The dishwasher is yours is an amazing payoff.
So as you may or may not know, those are details about Skirmish on UK Conquest, Alan's military-based quiz show. We get some more details on that. 208 episodes were broadcast and are available on DVD.
Yeah. Presumably as a box set.
You can't get on one DVD.
The complete skirmish.
Yeah. So yeah, players vie to complete fictional or historical military operations with the fewest casualties, answering general knowledge questions to gain territorial advantage, toss up gung-ho points or accrue weaponry. It doesn't actually sound that bad. It sounds quite good.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of the kind of tactical board games that people are getting into now that sort of go on for days.
Yeah.
I feel like there was some kind of one-off TV show on the BBC a few years back where it was a bit like this that I think it was almost like a fictional terrorist situation and they had to respond accordingly in terms of like how they would action emergency services and stuff. And it sounds a bit like this.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, Alan goes into detail and says that it achieved 2% of the regional digital available audience. Can anyone remember how many people that equates to?
8,000.
Correct. 8,000 people. A few more than actually I would have thought for this kind of thing on UK Conquest.
But that is super low as well. Yeah, surely you're not making money.
And
I
suspect timeline-wise, this is back when you had digital channels or Freeview channels in the tens rather than the hundreds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame there's no footage of Skirmish and it was never actually filmed because Alan's grown a beard.
Which is a real shame.
Yeah, it's a shame that there was no actual, there was no actual filming.
Although
of
I don't know if I would want to see a particular episode where Alan says the tension on Celebrity Skirmish was such that Yvette Fielding soiled herself.
It was that tense.
Yep. So Alan's beard, he does shave it off when Bill Oddie has a tantrum when he hears he's growing one and sends him a very curt letter. So the tensions between Bill Oddie and Alan are there.
So the implication there is that Bill Oddie believes that only one of them should have a beard at any given time.
Exactly.
And Oddie got there first. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've just done a very quick Google search under Alan Partridge beard, and half of the pictures that come up are just Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen with a beard. But you can actually, there's a live DVD, Steve Coogan is Alan Partridge, Alan Partridge presents the cream of British comedy, and it is Alan with a beard.
Oh,
wow.
And he looks a bit
holding a
sort awful.
Of can of cream saying,
well, it's cream the cream of British comedy.
Can we get that picture on the socials?
Yeah.
So what is that?
It's the cream of British comedy.
That answers my question.
Actually, yeah, I think it was an event for the Teenage Cancer and Alan was essentially the compere for a night of comedy.
Worth also noting that Alan uses a beard trimmer that's recommended on Eric Clapton's website, because that's a thing.
Good to know.
And Alan goes into some detail about his meeting with Matt and Mario from AAA Productions. Apparently, ITV were keen on Skirmish, and then Alan gives us details on something that I would have loved to have seen. Part of the marketing material from AAA includes a photoshopped image image of Alan as Rambo, armed to the nines with high-grade weaponry and question cards.
Amazing.
If anyone out there could do that Photoshop, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. Specifically and tastelessly, they superimposed it over the actual screenshot of him shooting Forbes McAllister on Know Me, Know You, including a speech bubble of Forbes saying, be careful with that.
Alan, obviously...
Did we think ITV were genuinely interested?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Thought we'd clear that up.
Alan, I also think, Alan probably mocked up the marketing material on ITV's behalf, and he probably thinks that they prompted it. He probably sent them a fax and said, I'm thinking of doing this for your commission. Yeah. Please reply if you're not interested, and they didn't reply.
Yeah.
One really nice detail that I like in the book here is when he says, I leave the meeting laughing my head off, and then there's a little footnote at the bottom, and it says, a fit of giggles that only stopped on my drive home when I realised I was also crying. So Susie Dent co-hosts the initial first episode of Skirmish, but she quits after one show because she has not had the format properly. She hasn't had the format properly explained to her.
Turns out she doesn't want to be on an atrocity-based quiz show.
Yep, and Lisa Lanson takes over. Now, obviously, we know that's Lisa...
Iansen.
Oh, is that the audiobook pronunciation?
Lisa Lanson. Right.
Yeah. And he spelled it in the book with an L rather than a capital I as well. It's Lisa Iansen, but he's put Lisa Lanson.
And on Alan's insistence, they're making 3 shows a day, 6 days a week. And as Alan says, this proves to be his undoing.
That sounds grueling.
There's some dark foreshadowing of what's to come. Those are all the notes that I have on this chapter. I'll throw it over to you guys if there's anything else to add.
Well, all I was going to say is there's 2 words in this chapter that I didn't expect to see, and that is dog's vagina.
That's a fair point.
To give that some context.
Please do context.
It's new satellite channel UK Conquest was sniffing around like a randy dog who's picked up the musky excellence of another dog's vagina.
Wow.
Also worth mentioning that the channel's ethos, and I presume their tagline, was guns, girls, guys, grr.
It's men and motors, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or like, was it Bravo or something? Is that another one?
That's similar? Yeah. I also wondered if the fact that he insists that they're doing 3 shows a day, 6 days a week is in fitting with the thing we talked about before, where he considers the quantity of broadcasting to be the measure of how well he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. Very good point. The only other thing I thought was worth mentioning, I really enjoyed when he talks about AAA productions, telegraphing the fact they weren't even based in the building, but were a back bedroom operation masquerading as a properly established company. And that's exactly how Apache Productions operate, particularly when he has the meeting with Dante's Fires.
And arguably, that's even more advanced as a company than Pear Tree Productions was when he first pitched it and it didn't exist at all.
All very good points.
So yeah, that wraps up my section.
Okay, there we go. That's the end of chapter 25 of iPartridge. Next week, we're going to be moving on to My Drink and Drugs Heck and Beyond, rattling towards the end of the book.
Can't wait.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @thepartridgepod, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, and Instagram @monkeytennispod. That's pretty much it from us then. We will see you next week for some Drink and Drugs Heck. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, thank you and goodbye.
See ya. Goodbye.
Monkey Tennis? Smelly Alan Fartridge.
Linton Travel Tavern seemed an obvious choice.
Monkey Tennis?
At the BBC of all places. Be real.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey Tennis?
It will be called Alan's Show. I decided, and would be absolutely ace.
Monkey Tennis?
But needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.